Chariot Solutions Developer News number 5 for February 15th, 2010. The Developer News is brought to you by the Philadelphia Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference, April 8th to 9th, 2010. Early bird registration has been extended until Monday, February 22nd. More information at phillyemergingtech.com. Each week we dig through our favorite Google Reader items and come up with news links to share with you. If you want to participate, bookmark with the tag DevNewsIdeas on Delicious, and we'll do our best to get your picks on the air as well. Just as a point of disclosure, sometimes we'll mention things about our different partners. You can find a list of our partners at chariotsolutions.com. Check the About Us section for the partners link. On to the podcast. Chariot DevCast number 5 for February 15th, 2010. I'm Ken Rimple.
And I'm Brent Baxter.
And we're bringing you some of the developer news that we happen to like. So if you go to delicious.com/developer news/5, you can follow along with our bookmarks. And why don't we get started? So we've got a whole mix of things as usual. Mostly this week it's kind of like a combination of Java and actually it's all over the map. It's Java, some Agile, some a little bit of Groovy mixed in, some Eclipse,
some Google,
some cloudiness. And you know, with that, all that snow, clouds come in, and you get stuff.
Yeah, that's right. The Philadelphia region has had its share of snow. So
yes, I don't know about anybody here from the. I don't know, the Mid-Atlantic, but I heard this week that at one point, 49 states had snow in them.
Wow.
And guess which one didn't? Hawaii! I think I'm moving to Hawaii.
There you go.
All right, why don't we start? So, Google Chart Tools from Google Code. If you go to code.google.com/API/chart tools, which is in the show notes, Google just released a set of tools to help you determine what types of Google Charts might work best for your project. It looks pretty interesting, actually. If you go to the actual page, they've got links to basically taking a look at the different types of charts image-wise and how to interact with interactive charts, and then kind of a guide on what to do. And there's just a ton of resources if you kind of click and drill down. So that's a really interesting site. If you want to do charts in your application but you don't want to integrate an internal library, you could use Google's charting API.
Right. And they have some nice examples linked to it as well and show you how to pretty quickly drop it in. Now, the one thing about this that's slightly different than some other charting tools is you actually use a web service API, so you have to upload your data to them. But, you know, if you're okay with that, it looks like it gives you some nice options.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Good. Well, I'll pick up the next one. We'll just go right down the list here.
Sure.
We have a blog post from Ed Burns, who is at Sun, or I guess now to be called Oracle.
Yep.
He's a JSF fan. And so basically what this is a nice little blog post that provides some analysis that Ed has done with regard to some of the news and, let's say, criticisms of JSF. And he's provided some delicious tags that link to various stories for you to peruse and to use as you would like. But basically, he's trying to point out that maybe some of the failings that some folks have pointed out about JSF maybe aren't as real as they might be in the current releases of JSF. So anyway, it's quite lengthy, but definitely worth the read, and get some really good information out there. And like I said, some nice links to various stories that you can use as you will.
It's definitely something to look at, because I know as JSF 2 comes out, Java Enterprise Edition 6 is being released, actually in the process of being rolled out now. I think you can get it on Glassfish from the aquarium. The whole app server that they put together.
Right.
And, Sun has made a pretty heavy move in investing in JSF over the last couple of years. And I think Ed actually was one of the creators of JSF. He's on the JSR committee and everything. And I do believe he's going to be at ETE this year.
Excellent.
He was interested in participating in our web framework shootout. So we'll see how that goes. I'm pretty sure we've confirmed him. But, JSF 2 is something to look at. And it's funny, last week I was actually teaching a spring course. A very specific Spring course for one of our customers, and they were looking at Spring Webflow with JSF on the back end. And actually, believe it or not, I mean, I was first thinking, well, I like Spring MVC and the way it does things, you know, just as a developer personally, my own biases. And then I looked at using Webflow as the view technology, and it kind of takes all the stuff that you had to manage with JSF early on, like the managed beans and everything, and
right.
You could just look up Spring Beans and use them. So it's really an interesting way of doing kind of the component-based swingish UI.
Right.
and on the back end being Spring, but on the front end being JSF. So,
right.
JSF is making its inroads in a lot of different places. It's something you should probably pay attention to as a Java developer. It may show up somewhere in your future. Right. You never know. All right. So let's see. So actually, our good friend Alex Miller, who's coming to speak at ETE as well. So I almost might as well say, and speaking at ETE on these.
Right.
Pure Danger Tech, which is his blog, tech.puredanger.com. Alex Miller actually ran the Strange Loop Conference last year in St. Louis, and for a long time ran this user group called the Lambda Lounge out of St. Louis on kind of functional programming languages and different things. So he actually posted 6-part series so far called Learning Clojure. And the most recent one is about the inspector. But if I drag myself down here and take a look at his posts, he's got a pretty good group of posts all blogged together under the category of Clojure. So if you're getting started with it, go ahead and take a look at his post. He might give you some information you could use.
Excellent. So the next one we have on our list is the Java 1 call for papers. So I think we had talked about this or sort of speculated about it before, but definitely Java 1. It had been in the spring in years past and now moved into the fall. So the Java 1 conference will run September 19 to September 23 of 2010, and they have opened their call for papers. So we have a link to that. It's a Java lobby posting on the DZone set of websites. So go ahead and take a look at that, and that provides all the information if you would like to proceed with submitting your idea for a paper.
Great. The next one is from Bilzabab, is the user on Delicious. He tagged one Scrum/Agile Failings or Thesis of Uncle Bob Martin. Now, also, not to keep talking ETE, but he's one of our keynotes. So this is something you could ask him about in person if you're in Philadelphia on April 8th and 9th. He actually came up with a list of 7 theses, kind of like the 99 theses,
right,
of Martin Luther. So he's doing 7 of Uncle Bob.
Right.
So, it's an InfoQ article by Mark Levison on February 11th. And basically, he was fielded a question about the inherent shortcomings of Scrum and Agile. So, some of the things that he has in there, it's like things like no technical practices or 30-day sprints are too long. I don't want to steal the thunder of the article. I think it's very interesting. So if you're an Agile developer and if you work with Scrum or any of those types of development processes, it's worth seeing what he has to say.
Exactly. All right. So moving along. So this is more of a tool rather than a developer sort of thing, but it's the new Google Buzz. So we have a link to the TechCrunch article that
Sebastian Provencier. That sound right? That's who submitted it.
Oh, yes. That's our user submitter?
Yes, our user Sebastian Provencier.
All right,
I got that wrong, I'm sure.
Wow. But,
yes.
So they provided a TechCrunch article here again about Google Buzz, and so in case you missed it, Google Buzz is a, and I'll do my best because I have to be honest, I'm not really sure exactly, but it showed up on my Gmail. It appears to me like it's Google's play into social media as it aggregates various social media feeds like Twitter or your Flickr account or various other social media type of websites. And it aggregates them directly into your Gmail interface. And then it provides, the functionality that we're all sort of familiar with, which is the follow. So as you find people in your Gmail contacts that you want to follow, you can follow them, and then their feed shows up in your Buzz inbox, if you will. So so again, it's social media focused, and this TechCrunch article sort of talks about it and Google Wave and sort of where the direction of these things, or speculating as to the direction of these things might be going. So
right. Yeah, I know for a while there, Google had Orkut, O-R-K-U-T.
Right.
And I know that was not popular in the U.S.
No.
But it apparently had a very big following, I even think, in Latin America
and
South America.
I think South America was big.
So they're trying to find a way of grabbing some of that hype and potentially lead it into your Gmail interface. Like everything else that you could possibly put. We got chat in there now. So I think video chat even.
Right.
Your contact list is in there. And if you have Gmail, you should play with the Google Labs. There's like so many things hiding
right
in there. I don't know about you, but like just as a developer productivity thing, I have this thing called Superstars. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, this thing kicks. So any of you developers who use Gmail as your email interface, I've actually started using the web more than actually a POP client. or whatever.
Right.
Because actually you can set up special stars and you can pick the icons you want. And every time you click on the star, it can change from like an info to an alert to a question mark to whatever.
Ah.
And then I set up the quick links bar, which is another Google Labs feature. And I found out, like, for example, if you have the exclamation point one, the search for that, as I'm pulling this up, and it'll take 3 minutes, just because I wanted to do it now. I actually say, you can say, in your search, you can say, has colon red dash bang, and that's the exclamation point, or has colon yellow dash bang, and it shows you all the yellows and reds in one search.
Okay, so this, so I've used the stars, but this is a Labs feature that turns on some extra
functionality. Different stars. So basically, and you can search by those icons. They have specific names.
Very cool.
And you can make quick links. So that's just a little productivity tip. That I just love that. I'm going to have to blog about that, because that's just
cool.
The bee's knees.
All right.
All right, cool. So was that yours just now?
That was mine.
You make me talk again. Oh.
Well, I can take the next one if you like.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I like the next one. It's pretty cool. So the next one we have is using Groovy Scriptlets as Spring Beans. And this is from Indic Threads. I don't know.
Like it. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. So this is pretty nice. As anyone that's been listening knows, I'm a bit of a fan of the Groovy and Grails. And so I won't actually go into all the details, but it shows a really clever way of using Groovy scriptlets. And there's actually a little description of what's the difference between a scriptlet and a class in here. But you can plug these things right into your Spring context using Spring's dynamic language support. So
on the lang namespace, yeah.
Yeah,
I see it there.
Okay. Yeah, so you can use a lang colon Groovy to identify your bean, your scriptlet as a bean. And then you can even do auto wire of properties directly into your scriptlet and then leverage that. So very, very cool. Very, very handy for anyone out there. You know, it could be nice for prototyping or whatever, but it could even be if you need some glue code out there and you just want to write a little Groovy scriptlet, plug it into your Spring context and away you go.
You know, one thing I thought I read somewhere about that, and this could be from a couple of years back, was that you can actually set up a refresh time. So you could say, you know, watch this file, and if it changes within X number of milliseconds. I don't know if they've changed that, because that's way early.
Yeah.
That was like 2007. So this is probably a lot more, maybe it already does that.
Right.
But this looks like a very good, very simple, very quick blog entry by... there it goes, Tom, on me. My Google Calendar interrupted me and said, did you know something's happening at noon? Roshan Dharani. So he's the blogger there on indictthreads.com, which you'll see in the show notes.
Right.
All right, good. Yeah, I'm digging so much stuff with Groovy, and I know that Groovy 1.7 came out recently.
Right.
You know, and they look like they're going to fold that into Grails in an upcoming release. It looks like very interesting stuff.
Exactly.
Okay. Software technology for multi-core is the next one. Easily find potential deadlocks in concurrent software without reproduction. Jamie Allen, actually one of our consultants, tagged this article. Apparently there's a tool, Multi-Core Software Development Kit, Multi-Core SDK, apparently is a piece of software you can mount and set up your application and run it within it, I guess. And it actually helps you find deadlocks in your code. So this blog entry, and it's actually, we have a link in the show notes because it's kind of a long name. But it's basically how this person used the Dining Philosopher's Problem, which is, a common deadlock.
Yeah, it's
deadlock.
A classic, yeah.
Right? You got the fork, I got the fork, something like that.
Exactly.
So they're using that as an example of the different types of deadlock you might hit, and walking through it using the multi-core SDK tool to actually detect the deadlocks. Very interesting, something I would definitely need to set aside an afternoon to hack with.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, how many times have you been on projects where someone says, we should use Threads, and the first knee-jerk reaction, like, don't use Threads, use queuing or something, because it's so hard to diagnose thread problems.
Right.
You know, hey, maybe this is a good tool in your toolbox.
Looks good.
All right. Interesting stuff.
All right. So next up on our list, we have a blog post about the Eclipse E4, and this is by Lars Vogel,
mm-hmm.
Who is a... did we say he's the project lead for E4?
He's one of the actual developers on the project.
Oh, he's a developer.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a little tutorial overview of what's coming down the pike with the next release of Eclipse.
Yeah, and it's funny. I interrupt you only because I'm not sure if it's the next release of Eclipse or a bundle of plugins.
Oh.
But so the good news is, not to interrupt you, is We'll probably have him or one of his friends on the podcast because they approached us recently.
Okay.
So expect to hear more about E4 itself in one of our actual interviews.
Right. Oh, so
go
this,
ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so this will get you started, I guess, on what's coming down. And clearly it's late-breaking news as we try to figure out what it is. And hopefully we get some clarification directly from the Eclipse Foundation themselves. That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
This is a very, very detailed blog post that basically walks you through downloading the tool, putting together an application, it looks like. So it's like an all-in-one bundle of E4. So definitely something to play with if you're an Eclipse developer. I know I shy on the side of IntelliJ myself, but I use Eclipse for trading and all sorts of other things too. So if you use Eclipse, you should probably look at what's coming up with E4. All right. Another article, not to leave our Ruby friends out. And actually, we're looking into doing a little more Ruby news down the road. We have a number of developers here that do Ruby and Rails, and I'm trying to rope someone in because I'm sure we could.
Right.
Here's one. Deploy a free Ruby-powered blog in 5 minutes with Toto and Heroku. Heroku is kind of like a quick on-ramp to hosting Ruby and Rails applications very quickly online. And so this is a walkthrough of Toto being a lightweight Ruby and Rack-based blogging engine by Peter Cooper. So he kind of walks you through how to install the gem for Heroku, how to go ahead and set up a blog and post it very quickly. So,
yeah, I mean, this is one of the nice things about Ruby is that it's and PHP, I guess, has a similar benefit. It's very simple to find hosting and get it up and running very quickly. So this is, this looks like a handy little tool for any Ruby fan out there that wants to set up some sort of blog.
Yeah, and one more. I'm just going to search it up here. There's the Ruby in Winter. We mentioned this, I think it was last week.
Right.
The Ruby in Winter. What is it called here?
Well, there's an online Ruby conference.
Yes,
coming
talk
up.
While I type.
Sure. No, it's an,
here
as,
it is.
As
here
I
it
recall,
is.
It's O'Reilly that's sponsoring this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's O'Reilly's conference, and it's happening. I believe it's on Thursday.
No, as I recall, it was a free online conference again offered by O'Reilly where you could dial in, and there was several pretty big name speakers that were going to be part of that.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It was like the founders. So,
and it's everything we just said. And I will tag it with a 5. So if you go to our show notes, you'll see it. It says Thursday, February 18. So if you're listening to this prior to that, and
that's this Thursday,
right? Yeah. And if you're looking for something to do, this looks pretty good.
Yep, definitely. In fact, we're doing a little party here with a group of our Rails developers. They're coming to the training room for 2 hours, and we're going to sit and watch what's going on with Rails 3. And for people who don't know about what the Rails 3 release involves, neither do I. No. Actually, it's not true. They're merging Rails and MIRB, which was a very popular alternative to Rails that Ezra Zygmuntowicz, I believe is his name.
Right.
I always get your name wrong, Ezra. I'm sorry. Ezra is working with some of the other major contributors to Rails, and they got together, and Rails 3 is kind of a synergy of the two. So
right.
It should be very interesting to see what they came up with.
Excellent.
All right. Well, that's the developer news. None too soon at 11:56 in the morning. If you want to look at the news articles we talked about, it's delicious.com/developernews/5. If you want to submit articles, and thank you to everyone who has this week, go ahead and put a bookmark in Delicious with the tag of Dev News Ideas, and we'll search for those before the show. If I didn't get yours this week, we'll take a look at them, and hopefully we can bring them in next week. So for the Dev Newscast, I'm Ken Rimple.
And I'm Brent Baxter.
And you have a great week.